2016 marks the 400th death anniversary of William Shakespeare, who, more than any other playwright in history, continues to have the same degree of vibrancy, relevance, and influence in our culture. His legacy lives on in classrooms, on stages, and in every form of media. To bring us some of the Shakespearean celebrations in our own neighborhood, we have Professor of English at Emory University and Director of the World Shakespeare Project, Dr. Sheila Cavanaugh. Sheila, welcome.
Thank you, Lois. I'm very happy to be here today.
Well, delighted to have you here and World Shakespeare right around the corner at Emory. Sounds most impressive. It seems like it would be easy to teach literature, poetry, and drama from the 16th century as a museum piece. That is something interesting for cultural literacy, but not something that might resonate with students in 2016. Why does Shakespeare continue to be relevant today?
Shakespeare speaks to so many current concerns and issues that his plays are relevant to people around the world. Students always come into contact with issues about love and power and geography. We've been talking this week with Macbeth and Othello. Aleppo comes up, and Aleppo is very much in the news. So even though different countries and generations can respond to a diverse selection of its texts, it's hard to find people who don't recognize topics of importance in their own lives within the plays. Mm.
So for those who say, another dead white European male, you say, uh-uh.
Absolutely.
And of course, we feel very strongly about the classical canon, the European canon, and indeed, certain truths are universal. It sounds like you are doing your part to make sure that you are reaching other cultures with Shakespeare. What exactly is the World Shakespeare Project, and what are its goals and initiatives?
The World Shakespeare Project uses site visits and video conferencing and other modern technology to link students, faculty, and arts practitioners around the world in discussions and performance exercises that are focused on Shakespeare. We're working with people on all continents right now, including Antarctica, thanks to the National Science Foundation.
Ah, Winter's Tale, I bet it
yes,
goes
indeed,
over very well
indeed.
There.
We're working with tribal colleges in North America and India, with universities in Morocco, Uganda, Ethiopia, Argentina, Brazil, Malaysia, and Japan, and we work with incarcerated Shakespeare students in several locations. So part of what we've been doing, for example, the tribal colleges in India were set up in very remote areas for the indigenous populations, very similar to tribal colleges in North America, which tend to be on reservations. And we've been able to bring students from each of those groups together to have discussions. In speaking to students in Malaysia, the students in Atlanta and the students in Malaysia each watched a Globe Theater production of Merchant of Venice that was a controversial production done by a group from Israel. One of the things that became clear in the discussion is Malaysia doesn't have political ties with Israel, and Emory obviously has a religiously diverse community, so we have Jewish students there. It made for a fascinating discussion between the students in Malaysia and the students at Emory. Students in Uganda are very well versed in traditional Shakespearean criticism and were able to bring their background in Shakespeare criticism into discussions about local traditions and local responses to things such as they found in Hamlet, where there is Ophelia's suicide, for example, and what happens in a family, in a religion, in a culture when there's a suicide.
Have you been to any of these places for these gatherings?
I have been extremely fortunate. I've been to many of them, not all, but I've spent quite a lot of time in rural India. I've been to Morocco, Uganda, Ethiopia, Argentina, Brazil. And the prison that we work with predominantly is in Washington State, and I go out there at least once a semester when we are working with the prisoners.
Of those international venues, can you tell us some anecdotes that were especially meaningful?
One of the things that I really appreciate is that the students in India are so eager to participate that they have been known to cancel local holidays in order to be present. And we just recently celebrated Teachers' Day in India. I think it's September 5th. And every year I get emails from students who participated in World Shakespeare Project events several years ago. One of the things that's been very nice in Morocco and in India, the universities didn't have many facilities, particularly for video conferencing. And thanks to working with the World Shakespeare Project, in both cases, they were able to raise local money and build video conferencing suites in order to dramatically improve their ability to link with international educational conversations.
Technology can be wonderful.
It can, indeed.
When it's wonderful, it's wonderful. Well, the English composer Benjamin Britten wrote an appealing opera based on Shakespeare's comedy A Midsummer Night's Dream in 1960. And Sheila, you've recently co-produced a modern operatic adaptation of this tale. Tell us about it.
So it was an exciting production presented in Città delle Pieve, Italy, which is in Umbria, and working in cooperation with the International Opera Theater of Philadelphia. It actually took place the same week as the earthquake in Umbria, so it was even more exciting than we had planned. But the performance included singers from several countries, and the costumes were designed by students based at a local Italian studio, which is dedicated to working with artists contending with Down syndrome and other significant mental challenges. Mm-hmm. This studio works with a restaurant in Rome who use their designs on their dinnerware, which they then sell to customers, and that's what keeps the studio going. So the students designed the costumes for the international singers, and then the costumes were made in Philadelphia and then presented on stage. So the opening night, I was there with a group of students with Down syndrome who were watching their costumes on stage. And we're now talking about doing a series of Shakespeare for Children's books where the Down syndrome artists will create the art, and I'll work on the text.
Oh, impressive. Well, let's listen to an excerpt of The Degradation and Desperation with the fairy chorus from A Midsummer Night's Dream with music by Von Guzman. Here it is.
Oh,
Oh, Italian opera in Italy. There's an extra added appeal, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Quite so exciting. That was music of Yvonne Guzman from the premiere performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream, staged just a few weeks ago in Italy and co-produced by our guest, Emory University Professor of English, Dr. Sheila Cavanaugh. So what is the next phase of the project?
Of the opera project?
Yeah.
Where this company, the International Opera Theater, is hoping to present the opera also in the United States. They're based in Philadelphia and will be back in Città delle Pieve next summer for the next world premiere opera. And as I mentioned, we're trying to do a series of books working with the artists. So there's quite a lot going on.
We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Sheila Cavanaugh of the World Shakespeare Project on City Lights from WABE. You are listening to City Lights on 90.1 and WABE.org. I'm Lois Reitz. I'm so glad to be here with you and Dr. Sheila Cavanaugh, Emory University Professor of English and head of the World Shakespeare Project. Well, what is planned for the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death?
The World Shakespeare Project's based at Emory and in working in collaboration with the Stuart Rose Library, with Theatre Emory, with Film Studies at Emory. We're celebrating a year of Shakespeare. There are many, many talks, exhibitions, performances, and special events associated with Shakespeare. The centerpiece is a copy of the first folio, which is being lent by the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. Emory is the only Georgia location for the display of a first folio. And because of our close collaboration with book collector Stuart Rose, we will also be exhibiting a second, third, and fourth folio. So it's an exciting opportunity for students and the public to see some very rare and important texts firsthand.
Sounds like a big deal.
And it is.
I was hoping you could talk about the first folio exhibit specifically and why it is significant.
I'd be happy to. And one of the things to be aware of is that Andrea Mays, who wrote the book The Millionaire and the Bard, will be speaking at Emory on October 24th. And she's got the story of how the Folger Shakespeare Library created its collection. It's got the largest collection of first folios in the world. And this is the first time they have shared their volumes with others. Normally, the Folger books do not leave the building. The first folio was a place where Shakespeare's plays were collected and published several years after his death. If we didn't have the first folio, we would have lost about half the plays that we now know as Shakespeare's greatest works. His plays were written to be performed, and not all of them were published during his lifetime. Two of his fellow actors compiled 36 of his plays, hoping to preserve them for future generations. If we didn't have the first folio, we wouldn't have 18 of his plays, including Macbeth, Julius Caesar, Twelfth Night, The Tempest, Antony and Cleopatra, The Comedy of Errors, and As You Like It. All 18 of those appeared for the first time in print in the first folio. So if they hadn't been printed then, we probably would have lost them. The Folger Shakespeare Library holds 82 copies of the first folio, by far the largest collection in the world, and more than a third of the 233 copies in the world today. Researchers believe that about 750 copies were originally printed. It's one of the most valuable printed books in the world. A first folio sold for $6.2 million in 2001 at Christie's, and another one for $5.2 million in 2006 in London. It originally sold for £1, which would be about $200 today.
Well, I'm curious because when we say first folio Shakespeare, okay, you might think 17th century, but as you mentioned, there are a few hundred, and Shakespeare didn't have this sense of his work being taught in the classroom. They weren't published to be read. They were written to be performed. How old are the first folios that are known?
Well, the first folio was published in 1623, and then the second, third, and fourth folios came after that, and with some changes and some additions. Books were very expensive to create at that time, so if there was an error discovered, they wouldn't go back and reprint. They'd wait until they had a new print run.
So the first folio that is on display at Emory.
The first folio on display at Emory, it's really quite interesting. I'm assuming that this is for security reasons, although I don't know that. They are not going to tell us until after it's back at the Folger which folio we have. They're not going to tell us where it's coming from, where it's going to, or which one it is. And again, I'm assuming that that's for security reasons. Once they're all back safely at the Folger Library in Washington, they will be publishing a chart to show which first folios went which places. First folios are quite identifiable and unique, the same way as fingerprints or snowflakes are. If you bring a first folio to a Shakespeare expert, they can identify by the paper, by the watermarks, by the typography, which first folio it is.
What was your personal reaction the first time you viewed a first folio?
Well, that was at the Folger Shakespeare Library, and it's very exciting. The library has an extraordinary array of materials, and the first folio is the gold standard for working on Shakespeare. And even if you're a Shakespeare scholar, you don't always have access to a first folio.
For me, looking at original manuscripts by Mozart, by Beethoven, just looking at the ink and thinking, my eyes are looking at ink that they put on paper, was very emotional, and I can imagine for a scholar like yourself, it must leave you with awe.
It does, and it also, one of the exciting things about working with Shakespeare is that there are so many other relevant texts and topics and things, and we've got the Carlos Museum and the Emory Library have an extraordinary array of related exhibitions on creation of early modern books, on artist books associated with Shakespeare, intersections between Shakespeare and the African-American theater tradition, Shakespeare and plants, Shakespeare in the ancient world, Shakespeare in the Americas, and Shakespeare in popular culture. So there really is something for everybody on the Atlanta and the Oxford campuses of Emory this year, because Shakespeare reaches so many different areas of our lives.
First Folio, the book that gave us Shakespeare, is an exhibit that will be on view at the Carlos Museum of Emory University from November 5th through December 11th. And for more information, you can visit carlos.emory.edu.